Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. A lot of people find themselves pushing off retirement or even starting a new job or career during their golden years. There are a lot of reasons for that, and this hour we'll explore some of those reasons, from economic pressures to personal choice. But we're going to start with someone who is really breaking the mold. Alcee Fitzgerald is a registered nurse who still travels for a living, but she lives in Deerfield Retirement Community in Urbandale. And she is with me now. Hello, Alcee.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I want to take you back in time just a little bit, back to 2005, because you actually tried retiring back in 2005. Tell me about that retirement attempt.
Well, like a lot of people, a couple of months before I had made that decision to retire, I'd reached retirement age. I started with a calendar where I marked off every single day, getting closer and closer to that date. I did retire in 2005, and within 2 months, was back to work because I realized retirement wasn't really what I was looking for. I really missed all of the interactions and the things that I was doing, the travel and so forth. So I decided to go back to work.
And you are a registered nurse, and you did practice in Des Moines, but as a registered nurse, you do a lot more travel than most registered nurses. Tell me a little bit about what you were doing leading up to your retirement in 2005.
Well, I started out, I worked in the operating room. I went to school at Iowa Lutheran Hospital, School of Nursing here in Des Moines, and I started out working in the operating room there. Then I went out and did 9 years in a family practice office, came back to the operating room, and actually in 1976 started the first ambulatory surgery within the hospital there at Iowa Lutheran. By 1980, I had moved to the first freestanding center in Des Moines, just across the street from the hospital. And actually, that's been my passion all these years. Obviously, we had a number of different owners who purchased our facility, and through that, I got involved in regional management, traveling. Pretty much, I had 9 different states and traveled quite a bit to different facilities that I was responsible for. Eventually, ended up as the director of clinical operations for Hospital Corporation of America, their ambulatory division, and with that, I traveled the entire United States.
Wow.
So, I had traveled quite a bit.
Absolutely. So when you were marking off those days in 2005, looking forward to retirement, what did you think you were most looking forward to?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with just not, having to get on that computer and do all the data and working every day or traveling, sleeping late, those kinds of things. So I really thought it would just be a relaxing lifestyle.
And it was relaxing, wasn't it?
Not exactly.
No?
I realized very soon on that I wasn't the kind of person that could sit down with a book and sit still for very long. I'd never done that. I wasn't the kind that could get engaged in TV programs. And so I was kind of lost as to what am I supposed to do with myself every day. And all those things that you think you're going to get done once you retire, you really don't get them done.
So you seem like a very unlikely person to have moved into a retirement community. Why did you make that choice?
Well, actually, it's because of my move to the retirement community that I'm able to continue to still work. I don't have to worry about cutting the grass or shoveling the snow, cleaning my apartment, maintenance, or cooking. I don't have to buy the groceries or cook the meals or wash the dishes even. All those things are done for me, so that allows me the opportunity to spend my time doing those things that I really enjoy. There's lots of activities there, but I also still can go and do my surveys and come back and not have to worry about, the security or if something's happened or a pipe broke while I was gone or whatever. So it is really nice that they provide me the opportunity to do the things I really enjoy, and I don't have to worry about those things, those chores, I guess you could say, that I didn't enjoy so much.
So one of the things that, of course, makes a retirement community a special place to live is that community, that sense of being part of something larger and being able to connect with new friends at a time of life where some people find living independently to be very lonely. How can you take advantage of that part of a retirement community when you're traveling so much for work?
Well, like I said, I don't go full time, and I can pick and choose where I want to go and when I want to go. So I try not to schedule things that would conflict with things that are going on at Deerfield at that time. We do have a lot of activities, and it's really important to have that sense of community. If I didn't live there, I'd be sitting home alone and probably would work a whole lot more than what I am now. But I find that I'm scaling back mainly because I do have friends there and I have things that I can do that keep me occupied.
When you retired in 2005, you were going stir crazy at home, and that's what drove you back to work. But I also wonder, how did that change your perspective? How does that make you think differently about the work that you do and the value it brings you in your life?
Well, I have been passionate about the ambulatory surgery industry since I first got into it in 1976. It's a fairly young industry, 40-some years old, but I really enjoy going around and seeing different facilities and helping them to meet the standards they need to meet, to be accredited, and to meet the Medicare requirements. I like to say I'm not a gotcha surveyor. I come in to be educational and to try to help them because there's always, I say I assumed everybody did things the way I did until I found out that there's many ways of doing things and getting a good result. And I like to go in and share that. And a lot of my surveys are very education-based.
Do you have any advice that you would give someone else who's thinking about retirement right now, or advice that you wish someone had given you in 2005 when you did retire?
Well, I think the main thing is that you have to have a plan, decide what do you want to do with your life. I think you have to have something to fill that void. It's like if you've been really active and on the go all the time, and whether it's getting up and going to work at 7 o'clock every morning or whether it's getting on an airplane, whatever it might be, you know, think about what you're going to do with your life and have a plan. And I think you have to enjoy it. You have to enjoy life every day, and you find new causes, new things to do. We do a lot of volunteer work from Deerfield, and I actually I volunteer in the Clive Community Services, has a clinic, a free clinic that they do on Monday nights, and I volunteer as a nurse there. We have a number of our residents who get involved with Crestview School doing the reading programs, and we work with the Y and other organizations collecting clothes and so forth. So we tend to try to do a lot of volunteer type work, which keeps you active and gives you another focus.
Also, I think you do more now than most people do in their 30s.
Well, I guess I'm just an active person.
I think you are. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Alcee Fitzgerald is a registered nurse who still travels for a living but lives in Deerfield Retirement Community in Urbandale. And this hour, we're talking about Iowans who are working into their golden years. If that's part of your experience, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to meet more Iowans who are working into those traditional retirement years. But first, Brian Caskey is here, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. He's going to help us put this phenomenon in perspective. Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. And give me an idea of how big this is. How big is this phenomenon?
This is a transformative phenomenon. In fact, the National Lab, the group that actually confers all the nation's leading intellectuals, back in the 1990s, wrote a report that said, "The continued aging of our population is probably the biggest public health challenge that we're going to experience in the 21st century." And we're definitely seeing that with the continued aging of older adults and moving into the workplace or transforming the workplace.
So tell me when this started.
So actually, thank you. As a professor of health policy, I'd like to give a shout out to all the federal policies that have been out there to help structure this. And one of the first to really transform the ability for persons to continue aging in the workplace is something called the Federal Age Discrimination in Employment Act. And this was a bill that Congress passed way back in the 1960s that basically said employees could not be discriminated against by their employers on the basis of age. So just because I hit 60, my employer could no longer come to me and say, hey, you're costing us too much in salary and benefits, so we need to let you go. And this was transformative for the industry. And then later, the law was amended in 1986 by removing the upper age limit. So when the bill was originally written, they said, well, what we define aging as is between the ages of 40 and 70. But over time, they realized that wasn't good enough. So this amendment basically removed the upper limit. And it's worth noting that the amendment was advanced by this Florida senator named Claude Pepper, who actually ended up dying in office at the age of 89.
Wow. So you're working well into those golden years. What makes Iowa unique? I mean, this is something that's happening all across the country, but Iowa has some special factors.
Well, what makes Iowa unique is we just have a lot of older persons in the state. We're one of the grayer states in the country. We have a lot of folks who grew up here. They raise their families here, they work here, and they want to stay here through retirement. So they are now moving into this golden years of life and are looking for opportunities to what we call age successfully.
We also have a low unemployment rate. How does that play into it?
Well, the low unemployment rate begs the question, do we fill the jobs? That suggests there's a lot of jobs out there. And so the question for employers now becomes, how do we fill those? And historically, they filled those by relying on younger people entering the workplace. And that's just not happening anymore. For the last 20 years or so, you've had two phenomena. People under the age of 55, their labor force participation rates have held steady. That is, about 8 out of every 10 persons under the age of 55 are in the workforce. That's not going to bump up any further. And the other challenge is how we don't have a replacement. There are not as many young people as there used to be.
This hour, we are talking about Iowans working into their golden years. We will continue this conversation in a moment. With me, Brian Caskey, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. You're welcome to join the conversation as well. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Iowans who are working into their traditional retirement years. More and more Iowans, more and more Americans are doing it. You're welcome to join the conversation with your experiences, 866-780-9100. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Brian Caskey, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa, and also joining us now are Ann and Guy Booth. Ann owns and operates The Perfect Blend, an art gallery and bakery in Mount Vernon, where she specializes in baking classic Scottish shortbread. Hello, Ann.
Thank you, Charity.
And Guy Booth is an attorney with offices in Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. He's been practicing law for 48 years. Hello, Guy.
Good morning to you.
Welcome to the show. So I know that the two of you joke about this quite a bit, about asking each other, when are you going to retire? So, Guy, how did this get started? Why did the traditional retirement age sort of come and go?
Well, I think it's a little bit just because of my occupation. When you're practicing law, there aren't certain limits as to when something ends. And so if you take on a new client or a new case, you know you're looking out a year or two or even farther. And so I think I wasn't disciplined enough to say enough is enough. I'm going to stop on a certain date. You can't do that when you've had clients you've been with for many, many years. You have to sort of unwind, and I have yet to learn the unwinding process.
But I also get the sense that you don't necessarily want to retire. What about it is unappealing to you?
I don't know that there's anything unappealing. What's appealing is dealing with a number of people, helping them solve problems. I'm not a litigator anymore, so I don't worry about the stress of the courtroom. I have a great staff that I work with, other good lawyers in our office. So it's a fun atmosphere to talk about issues, whether they're legal or local and current social issues. So that atmosphere keeps me coming to the office every day as much as anything else, I think.
Ann, tell me a little bit about your business, because you've been baking for a long time. When did you start baking professionally?
21 years ago, Guy and I were able to buy a beautiful pre-Civil War home in or building downtown Mount Vernon, and it has been an antique center and art gallery and gift shop and an office for Guy. And we also have yarn shop upstairs and a studio. But the best part is I have a commercial kitchen. So I have started making more shortbread. And we have, I think I sell it now in about 18 different places, 19, 20. And those, for us, the orders come in at different times. So we are always looking ahead. And so we keep on going just the way Guy keeps on going.
Well, and tell me about your thoughts. I mean, I know you tease each other about retirement quite a bit, but why?
I was waiting for you to retire. Right. No, I thought waiting for you to retire. I said, we have to communicate better than that. But I know 3 years ago on vacation, we were hiking, and he talks about this a lot, but we never actually finalized any plans. But I said, okay, in 3 years, we're going to be done with this. And so we have 2 more years to go, and at some point, we'll start making some plans.
Have you changed your work schedule to accommodate some of the other things you want to be doing in your life during these years?
Well, I work every day. I mean, I take a Sunday and Monday off. And then at nighttime, sometimes if we're behind, I'll be even working at nighttime. But Guy is also working at his office at night, so we spend some quality time together there.
All right, so you're still working a lot.
I have had to stop some things. I have played in a harp ensemble, and they all retired, and so they can play during the day. And so I'm not doing that anymore. And I don't know, we just keep on doing.
How about you, Guy? You mentioned you're not in the courtroom anymore. Is that a decision that you made to make your work more enjoyable?
Yes. There's a lot of stress, and especially when you're dealing with timelines and everybody else's schedule in the courtroom. So I made that decision several years ago. So I've really wound down that part of my practice, and I'm enjoying being in the office more. And so that's been one step in the direction towards retirement. And then you asked how are we changing our schedules. We have taken a little bit more time off. Took maybe a 10-day trip to Tucson this spring, and we were just in our place in Michigan for 10 days. So those are the two longest vacations I've taken probably in the 48 years I've been
practicing. Well, good. So, congratulations on that. Well, you guys are grandparents as well. And, of course, you're both self-employed. Does that give you flexibility to go see the grandkids, do what you want to see them do?
We fortunately have kids in town. So we've gone to all of their sports and music events. But then we have kids in Omaha. And that's where we're going to be heading pretty soon.
Right. Anne's correct. We are able to have our schedules coincide with the schedules of the kids. And that's been very helpful being self-employed. We make those decisions. So.
All right. Well, I get the impression that both of you really enjoy your work. But I'm curious, Guy, does the idea of retiring kind of scare you?
It does. It seems to me that if you retire, you better be ready to have something to take the place of that. I think intellectually, you need to have the contact with people. You need to be exchanging ideas. And if you were to retire and not move yourself in that direction, and I think it takes some forethought to make sure you are filling that void that is suddenly in front of you. So I think that's the most important thing. And I haven't found the answer to that is yet. But I would think I'll be more involved in some volunteer services at that point.
Yeah. What about you, Anne? Does the idea of retiring scare you a little bit?
I keep thinking of the gardens that I'll get to, and that makes me very happy.
Yeah.
I think I'll be able to read more instead of listening to books on tape while I'm working. And I think it'll be fun because I think that we'll do more things together. We work together, but...
Right. Would one of you consider retiring if the other one continued to work, or is this something that you need to do together?
We need to call it quits together.
I disagree. I think one of us will get there first.
Yeah?
And that's what we have
Who?
To...
Well, this is interesting. Now I feel like I'm maybe doing a little marriage counseling. Right? So what, for other people in your age range, do you have any advice for people who might want to think about continuing their careers, a way of finding a way to continue your career during these years? Guy?
I'm not sure. There are so many factors. You know, health is a big factor. Finances are a factor, and then, of course, having some goals once you retire. So everybody has that certain mix that they have to fit together. And Anne and I are fortunate. We've had good health. We have a lot of activities. Our work is a pleasure, and that's not true for a lot of people. So I don't have advice except look at all of these factors and then see what is going to be best for
you. Anne, anything you want to add to that?
Well, that's, I believe that.
Anne and Guy Booth are here with me today. They are a living example of what so many Iowans are doing, working longer into their retirement or traditional retirement years. We've got a number of calls on the line, and you are welcome to stick around and weigh in as you hear things. I want to bring Brian Caskey back into the conversation, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. And just before I talked to Anne and Guy, Brian, you were helping us understand how big this phenomenon is, and it is pretty big, and it's been going on for a while. Anne and Guy are an example of people who love what they do and want to continue that into their retirement years because they obviously care about what they're doing. So give me an idea of how we're seeing that example play out in the larger population.
So back to the notion, I'm glad you brought it up, is the tremendous advances we've made in health over the last 50 years, too. So again, not only to recognize the Age Discrimination Employment Act, but Medicare and Medicaid are two federal health insurance programs that basically provide near universal health coverage to persons once they hit 65. And that's huge opportunity for persons not only to continue to age successfully, but also frees them from the need to go find insurance on their own. And so we've seen this transformation as Medicare and Medicaid have unfolded. More health services are delivered, the quality of life is improved, and people are living longer. And so the question, and you brought this up nicely, is we got to figure out what to do with this extra decade of life that the baby boom generation and everybody who comes after that has been given. This is a huge gift to extend our life expectancy. In fact, most people who are born today should expect to live to see 90, if not 100 years. So the question needs to be asked, what are you going to do? Because we constructed this labor market in which we kind of expect people to leave at 65, but that just doesn't hold up anymore. And so some people are in retirement and they kind of go play golf or they go do leisure activities, but you two are great examples of people who just say, you know, I prefer to continue working. And I do that because I like it. I do that because it provides me some amount of meaning. And maybe I do that because I don't know what else to do with myself.
Well, and I need to also look at the flip side of this, which is there are many Iowans and many Americans who cannot afford to retire. So tell me more about that, because I'm sure that there are probably some people listening right now who are saying, I would love to play more golf, but I can't because I honestly can't afford it. So we are seeing that portion of the population grow too, right?
Right. I mean, To complement the stories here, you know, we have a person we generally categorize as a white-collar professional, self-employed. In that space, you're allowed to what we call self-determine. You make the rules as long as the other partners in your firm come to an agreement with that. And that's what happens for a lot of people, lawyers, professors, is they'll negotiate individual retirement pathways. But we don't see sort of a specific institutional or an employer-sponsored approach. And as our as Anne suggested, other people decide they want to choose a second career. You know, I'm done with what I did as a younger person, my primary career, I'm no longer interested. I want to try something new. I want to try baking. We call those second careers or encore careers. But to your point, not everybody can do that. And they may not be able to do that for a couple reasons. And one thing people continue to work for is income. We just haven't provided enough opportunities for people to have access to what we call employer-sponsored retirement savings programs. There are a lot of people out there whose income just wasn't high enough to allow for enough savings to offset these extra 10 years of life. And there are others out there who've really been bankrupted by what we call a catastrophic medical event. Having to take care of a spouse who has a condition like Alzheimer's disease not only can be draining emotionally and physically, but financially as well. So these people have to continue working.
And I'm sure that, that others will share their stories with us. You are welcome to share your story at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Betty's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Betty.
Hi. Good morning, Charity.
Yeah, thanks for calling. What's your story?
Well, I retired at a young 60. I had taught for 36 years. I taught music in the Des Moines schools. And the last couple years, I could tell that I was burning out. And for the sake of the kids, I needed to get out of there. I had great plans. I was going to be an over-the-road truck driver or maybe a pilot car driver, you know, with the big wind turbines. I had different things. Well, after going, you know, 100 miles an hour between teaching music, then going to teach private lessons at home, then going to rehearsals at the Des Moines Symphony, when I retired, I found myself sitting on the couch fairly depressed. And after a couple months, my husband said, get out of your pajamas. We need help down at the office. He has his own business. And so I became a file clerk extraordinaire. And I like it. I can set, you know, just 6 to 10 hours a week, go in when I want to, travel to other places, play in the Sioux City Symphony, play in the Southeast Iowa Symphony, and then travel with my husband. He is not retired. Our son, who is buying the business from him, would like him to retire, but there's too much knowledge that he has to let him go completely. So he's been put on a quarter-time salary, of course, still working full-time. But, no, he loves it. I don't think he'll retire. I'm just happy as can be doing my own thing without him retired. And that's it. That's my story. But I'm loving it. It was a little bumpy for a couple of months, but now I've found my path. I am not so inclined at this time to volunteer because teaching middle school for 36 years, I think even though I was being paid, that felt like a community service.
Sure. I think all of us agree with you on that. Betty, I'm curious, doing something that maybe engages your passions less, takes less of an emotional toll, does that feel easier to compartmentalize your work and not take it home with you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I like what I'm doing. I do some data entry. I often just go work in on the weekends when I love the employees down there, the staff, but I get so much more done by myself. And I can do that. I can do what I want during the week and work on weekends by my choice.
Well, Betty, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. You can share your story as well at 866-780-9100. And I saw you nodding a little bit at Betty's story there, Brian. Does that sound like something, an experience that a lot of people you've encountered have had?
Oh, absolutely. And she highlighted the critical role that, in this case, her husband, i.e. the boss, plays in this. What we're finding are a lot of employers are starting to realize that because we don't have younger people to come in and fill positions, they need to start looking at persons who are what we call experienced employees. And What's interesting is these experienced employees who've already worked 30, 40 years won't put up with sort of the standard 40-hour a week, 9-to-5 approach that a lot of HR practitioners pursue. They're saying, I'll come back and work for you, but under the following conditions. And that's what we just heard. I want to be able to come and go. I want to be able to take time off to visit my kids. And you know what? If you can't accommodate me, I don't need to do this.
Yeah.
So
we are going to take a short break here, but I also need to say goodbye to Ann and Guy Booth. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Ann and Guy Booth sharing their stories of working longer. Ann Booth owns and operates a bakery slash art gallery called the Perfect Blend in Mount Vernon. And Guy Booth is a practicing attorney with offices in Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Brian Caskey is staying with us, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. And you're welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowans are working longer than ever before. This hour, we're talking about that phenomenon. Of course, some older Iowans work because they want to, some because they need to. And we'd love to hear about your experience. 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Brian Caskey is here, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. And also joining us is Jerry Anderson. He is retired from a 32-year career as an Iowa State Trooper with the Iowa Highway Patrol, but he's still spending a lot of hours behind the wheel, but now it's behind the wheel of a lawnmower as he mows and maintains cemetery grounds. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. And when you were with the Iowa Highway Patrol, you were also part of the Honor Guard. And I know that going to a lot of the funerals of your colleagues is part of what made you think about what you wanted to do with your retirement career or your retirement years. Tell me more about that.
You know, that is very true. I wasn't even thinking about retirement. I was one of their first ones on the Honor Guard with the patrol. And I started to realize that when we were having the funerals, a lot of them probably weren't more than 60, 62 years old. And you have to have a goal. And I started to look at this. And if you don't have a goal in mind when you I don't even like the word retirement, to be honest. But if And we have a system where we retire, you know, you can retire a little earlier than a lot of people do. And it's a good system because you have you're working days and nights in the night shift when you're up to 55, 60. It's not a good place to, that the rotating shifts are not, you know, really good for you
yeah,
neither.
Yeah, that's tough.
So what you start to realize after that, my kids and my wife were involved with me in when I was off duty in a lot of things. And we did, when we started, we even managed an apartment house when I first came out in 1968. The wages were a lot different than they are today. And I grew up on a farm. So I was on a dairy farm. So I was used to getting up in the morning and working. And so when I had 32 years in on the patrol, it was, I enjoyed the job the day I started just as much as the day I retired or
nice.
I quit.
Yeah.
And I know some places you don't, so I wasn't ready to do, you know, walk away and do nothing. And this lawn business that I had, I'd actually started it with the kids. And actually my wife was involved in a lot of the stuff that we did together too. And she was a stay-at-home mom with the kids, and you needed that with the rotation shift I had. And then after our kids were gone, and after the 32 years I put in, she was in real estate for 22, 23 years. She's still doing it. But she was... last year, she said, you know what? I'd kind of like to why don't you get me a mower and I'll mow with you?
Wow.
So she is doing that now. And over a period of time, I put about 500 hours on a lawnmower is what I do in the summertime in mowing. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons, you know, you have to have a goal, the job in law enforcement and also probably different jobs, you never realize what you've accomplished. I go home, you know, and, you know, you've met a lot of people on the road and you're looking for negatives all the time.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to look at negatives anymore. I wanted to kind of do to the positive.
Right, and you can see what you've done when you mow,
so true. And you say, hey, I did that, and it looks good. And that's something I never realized a lot, you know, with the other job I had. So,
right.
I guess that's one thing I would say, if you ever get to the point you retire, it's probably good to do something different. Then I know the booths decided, you know, the bakery thing. And I think it's good to maybe try something different. And the other thing that when you're on a schedule, the hours, it really makes a difference when you're on a schedule for hours. And if you can make your own timing and not under pressure, that is another good thing.
Right. So and work when you want to. Want to get it done.
And I know that the health, I've been blessed with, you know, good health, so I can still do it.
Right. So and mowing the cemeteries, I mean, mowing during the summer months, of course, you're really busy during that time. So what do you do during the winter months?
Well, we have a snow removal business, too. So I don't get to take off completely.
All right. But it's maybe a little more downtime.
Yeah, yeah. But it's one of those things you know, maybe it snows 10 times a year or whatever, but I've actually had accounts for a long time, the same ones. And actually, I shouldn't say I'm in this by my – I have grandkids that are working with me. They do the trimming and stuff, the hard stuff with the lawns, because cemeteries are hard.
Yeah.
But so it's something that it's been good to us to do, and I enjoy it.
Do you find it to be sort of therapeutic to spend that time by yourself?
Very much so, because, you know, when you have a job, you're dealing with people all the time, a lot, and you know when you're going to stop somebody, there's different personalities out there, and you never knew what you were going to be dealing with. And I like people. I like to deal with people, and I still do. I still in groups today, and I meet with the retired people and a lot of, you know, the troopers that are working even, but one of the things that, like I mentioned before, if you can do something that you really enjoy and don't have to watch the clock. And I tell the guys that are getting close to retirement or whatever, just do something different and really do something different when you put in 32 years or whatever because of the stress you're under.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, and I can imagine.
And I think that's probably what I'm saying is healthy,
yeah.
You know, for you. Mm-hmm. And the honor guard thing that I started out with here was really an eye catcher for me. I thought, wow, you know.
So you felt like some of your colleagues were actually dying young, maybe because they lost that meaning, they lost that purpose?
Well, you have to have another interest, and you can't just maybe watch TV I shouldn't say that, but you have to have a goal and, you know, whatever the goal is.
Right.
But in your family is the one that really can support you on that. I'm not knocking anybody that didn't do it. I got to be
careful.
No,
not at all. Not at all. But I understand. I understand what you're saying, that fear for you was that if you didn't have that purpose, if you didn't have something to get you out of bed in the morning, maybe you wouldn't be getting out of bed in the morning. I'm talking with Jerry Anderson. He's retired from a 32-year career as an Iowa State trooper, and now he has a mowing business, also snow removal for the winter months. We have a lot of people who want to share their experience experiences. This one's from Daniel. He says, retirement ain't all it's cracked up to be. After more than 35 years of being an elementary teacher and principal, not going to work was killing me. Those first few months were the worst. I feel so blessed that I happened to pick up a local newspaper and spotted an ad seeking an office manager for a nearby church. The job is part-time and gives me a lot of flexibility, especially to be at home when our youngest got out from school. But when he moved on to boarding at a high school in Minnesota, I had more time on my hands. Thankfully, my wife convinced me to sign on as a substitute teacher in two local school districts and local parochial schools. While I've given up the subbing, my morning job with the church gives me some purpose in life. So that echoes a lot of what you were saying, Jerry. And Brian, it echoes a lot of what you were saying. I mean, we have been given these longer lives. So many of us are living longer. But it also, for so many of us, is very healthy to have that daily purpose, that reason to show up, right?
Absolutely. And I'd like to highlight the critical role, again, that employers play. And in our research, we notice there are differences across employers about how they address their experienced workforce. And so your example of having a family business, family-owned businesses, even large corporations like L.L. Bean that are largely privately held businesses, for some reason, they understand this better. And so they're working with their employees to develop these sort of different pathways that people can take in retirement. So seasonal positions, part-time positions. And these employers, these family held companies understand the importance of that. And it's a stark contrast to publicly held for-profit companies that just haven't moved into this space yet. And that's what we think is important. The other thing that employers are starting to think about more is what can we do to help you while you continue working? So they're recognizing, for example, aging employees also have aging parents, and they're going to need accommodations at their workplace to go home and take care of their mom, who may have had a hospital admission and may need a couple weeks of follow-up care, and they're looking to their adult children to help them. Well, employers who recognize that need will develop programs on site to give them support with caregiving, help them figure out how insurance works, and give them time off under the Family Medical Leave Act.
Well, and that's something these older employees also need to know their rights, because mm-hmm. not every employer is going to mm-hmm. admit that the Family Medical Leave Act applies to
exactly.
these family members, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people who want to join this conversation. Hannah Laura is on the line in Fairfield. Hello, Hannah Laura.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, tell me about your story.
I'm sorry?
Tell me your story.
Yes. I'm thinking about my parents, the youngest of six. They gave us everything. We needed instrument lessons. They'd get us the best teacher, make sure we had the best instrument. And now that they're older, they're still working so hard. My dad's in his 80s, and when he had a heart attack, actually, and found out he had diabetes. And so when he hit age 65, he was just kind of like, I'm done. He quit working. He got kind of bored at first and just found things to do. And eventually, you know, he just helped my mom. And she is in her late 70s and still working all the time, working so hard, you know, just doing gigs. And I just wish that they could have some more time, you know, in their retirement. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
So you feel like your mom can't retire because they just can't afford it?
Nope, they can't. You know, she's in her late 70s, and she's been a music teacher for 50 years. She's amazing at what she does, but, you know, the VA takes care of my dad's health, and my mom has always just kind of gotten by.
Oh, wow. Hannah Laura, thank you so much for sharing that with us, because we have highlighted a lot of really positive stories about people diversifying in retirement and finding a lot of joy and meaning in their long careers. But Brian, I mean, as Hannah Laura is describing, there are a lot of people who are not finding that joy, but have to work.
Unfortunately, there's a large number of people who are in retirement right now with not sufficient amount of savings. And so they need to continue working. And here in Iowa, I think we're in a terrific position to provide opportunities for that to happen. For example, our governor has recently been appointed to a national job training task force, in which actually has drawn the attention of the first daughter, the special advisor. And they're focusing, if you notice, on a lot of private sector job training opportunities that seem targeted to younger people. And there's really no reason why those job training or job placement services can't start thinking more about our aging Iowans. And, for example, having our community college or other publicly financed institutions, they should be incentivized to have older persons come back, take courses, get certificates, and assist them with job placement in these sort of second careers or other transitional jobs. I mean, not only does it give them meaning, but in a lot of cases, it gives them the security and finances they need.
Absolutely. And it sounds like we're underutilizing a lot of these older workers.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's go to Elizabeth, who's on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Can you share your story quickly? Yeah.
Yeah, I've had the greatest life since sliced bread. I'm from Cedar Falls originally. I went to college. I got a master's in psychology and philosophy at the University of Northern Iowa, and I didn't want to stay in Iowa at that point. So I applied to the airlines because I wanted to see the world. I used to travel with my father. He was a businessman here in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, and Cedar Rapids. They had companies. So I traveled, and I applied for the job with TWA. I got hooked on the job, and I was there for 40 years. So I was in 33 countries, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Saudi Arabia, Istanbul, you name it, movie stars. I lived in San Francisco. I was a realtor in San Francisco, and I worked for the De Young Museum and the California Historic Society, and I wasn't married. I came back to Iowa, believe it or not, and the long short of it is I married at 48. I'm 75. I inherited my family home that I picked out in seventh grade. So I wrote a book. My book is called Wingtip Shoes, Memoirs of a Flight Attendant. And I am now all over the world. The book has gone viral. And I have friends from American, TWA, you name it. They're all over. So we travel. My husband is still working. He was a licensed realtor, and he had ran the food business, fast food restaurants. And he's now with the VA in Cedar Rapids, so we have two houses. I see him on weekends. It's kind of like we're dating again.
Wow, it sounds like you've become a real jet setter in these retirement years. We're out of time, but Elizabeth, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. It sounds like a very fortunate golden year situation there. So, Brian, what I'm hearing from you is that with this changing workforce, we really need to look at how employers need to also change their practices and provide for this workforce.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, to echo off what this person just said, I think one of the neatest programs you can find at the Iowa Community Colleges is culinary schools or certificates. And I had no idea what these students do when they graduate, but the deans of those schools told me they go work in resort properties and cruise lines. And I can't think of a more interesting or exciting thing to do as I get older than to go back, get some sort of culinary degree that then allows me to travel.
Wow.
It'd be a really neat program, and I hope we gather more attention to it.
All right. Well, it sounds like a lot of creative things that if you have the freedom, if you are fortunate enough to have that kind of freedom and that financial stability, you can do with these golden years and a changing workforce in Iowa. Brian Caskey, thank you so much for being here today.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Brian Caskey, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. And Jerry Anderson, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Jerry Anderson is retired from a 32-year career as an Iowa State Trooper, and he now spends a lot of time behind the wheel of a mower, mowing cemeteries. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Special thanks today to Dean Borg, who gave us a great deal of production assistance. I'm Charity Nebbie.